I'd like now to welcome, joining us by telephone, Jose Antonio Orozco. He is the author of the book Cesar Chavez and the Common Sense of Nonviolence, published by the University of New Mexico Press, and he will be at Garcia Street Books here in Santa Fe tonight at from 5 to 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, and I'm glad to be here.
Give us a little background about Cesar Chavez. He was born in Arizona in 1927. How did he come to be the great labor organizer and activist we know about?
Well, his family were farm workers. They lost their home, like many Americans did, during the Great Depression in the 1920s, and they had to become farm workers, and they made their way into California in the 30s and worked as farm workers all up and down the California coast. And eventually they settled in the Central Valley area, and for many, many years, Cesar Chavez worked in the farms, picking crops, and just learned the difficulties of farm worker life there for many, many years. And then he went off to the military during World War II, and he came back and was working again in the fields, and decided that he got involved with various kinds of political organizations, and decided that it was necessary to try to alleviate the difficulty and the suffering of farm workers who were so exploited and were taken advantage of California agribusiness, and so decided that needed to start a union for farm workers. And the interesting thing about farm workers, agricultural labor in general, is that it was always one of these sectors of workers that were never protected by federal labor law, and so they were always the most vulnerable workers in the United States, and were never able to organize very effectively. And so he decided to take this on, and of course, as history shows, he went on to develop the United Farm Workers, one of the most effective labor organizations representing this very vulnerable population that feeds almost every American in the world, in the United States and in the world today.
You write about Cesar Chavez as a political thinker along with Gandhi and Martin Luther King, but he isn't usually considered that way. Why not?
Well, this is the interesting thing, and this is partly why I decided to write the book, is I teach peace and justice studies at Oregon State University, and whenever people talk about the philosophy of nonviolence, there's always these figures that are thrown around, like Thoreau and Gandhi and Martin Luther King, and these are always the names that are associated with the thinking and the theory of nonviolence. And Cesar Chavez is always brought up as an example of someone who was an activist, someone who was working and organizing people, but never someone who contributed to the theory of nonviolence, about what nonviolence means and what are the strengths that people gain from becoming nonviolent and what pacifism is about. And so what I was interested in was trying to find what were his thoughts, what were the ways in which he envisioned nonviolence as a source of power for ordinary people. And what I found by reading his speeches and some of his writings was that he had some very, very unique thoughts about how ordinary people develop power and organizing in their communities can make great changes in the quality of their life. And I saw that some of this stuff was very, very different than the kinds of things that Gandhi was talking about with his nonviolent campaigns in India. And in some senses, I found that it was even more relevant, and I think in some sense more relevant today than some of the things that Martin Luther King was talking about during the Civil Rights Movement with the use of nonviolent tactics then. So what I started to investigate was how exactly could we look at Cesar Chavez as a philosopher of nonviolence, someone who could help us understand solutions to our political problems today and our social problems, confronting violence and militarism and poverty through the philosophy of pacifism and nonviolence. And I found a rich resource in some of his thinking. And so I think that he's an underappreciated, what I call a community intellectual, an underappreciated community intellectual, someone who can help us understand the kinds of problems that the United States faces.
You said something very interesting. I mean, he has a philosophy of nonviolence, but there is another kind of power. How would you describe the nature of power in Cesar Chavez's view of nonviolent power?
Well, I think that this is something that actually he shares with lots of other philosophers of nonviolence, is that many people think that to be a pacifist or to be a nonviolent activist is to be a coward or is to be passive, right? And but this is the mistake, right, that pacifism doesn't mean passive, right? And in fact, Gandhi said this, is that you need a lot of courage to be a nonviolent activist. And so the idea is that nonviolence is a way of organizing people together to be be able to put pressure and to coerce government to make changes towards hopefully a better social justice. But it does so using nonviolent means. That is, we never target to deliberately hurt people's lives, to harm them, to kill people. But the idea is that we organize people to get a message out there. How do we train people to give them the discipline to stand up for themselves, to have a sense that they have a role to play in making their society better? And so the idea of power is one in which you develop power as a group together to make changes. And so no individual person has power by themselves. They have something that we might call strength. An individual can be strong. But a community is something that has power. And it's a power of being able to trust on with one another, rely on one another, and to be able to come to an agreement about what needs to be changed in their lives so that their lives can be lived better. I think this is the kind of notion of power that Cesar Chavez is talking about. And the idea is that nonviolence is a tactic and a means by which to develop that power and to deploy it. So there's a lot of instances where he talks in military terms, right? He says that nonviolent activism is sort of like guerrilla warfare, but always he wants to emphasize that this is without the use of ever trying to deliberately hurt people or kill people, but it's to make to give voice in some sense to the powerless that are in our society by giving them power, by giving them voice, and moving things towards justice.
You draw a parallel between protest marches and pilgrimages in Mexican culture and people's ability and willingness to suffer for a greater goal.
Yeah, what I say in the book is that what I think that what's unique about Cesar Chavez was he was trying to develop a philosophy of nonviolence based on three principles or three values of nonviolence. And the first is this idea of pilgrimage. And the idea is here is that life should be seen as a journey towards greater justice, that we should see our lives as moving towards this kind of goal, and that this kind of goal should give orientation to the kinds of ways that we live our lives. So the idea is that we should see our lives as a pilgrimage towards the greater power of justice. And this is what he saw his life being devoted to. The second value is this idea of penitence. And this goes to the idea of the pilgrimages that you see in Mexico City, particularly around Easter. And also in New Mexico, where people will go to the Santuario de Chimayo. Right? The idea, this is a very deep and rich idea in Mexican culture and in Mexican Catholicism, the idea that it's important to suffer. And the suffering is not for the sake of any kind of masochism, but it's the idea that by suffering you gather strength and focus and you gain the kind of vision that you need to be able to give yourself strength to move ahead towards that path towards justice. Right? And this is, like I said, this is an idea, this idea of penitence, of suffering, is very old in Mexican Catholicism, but you can trace it back even further into the Mesoamerican roots of the Aztecs and the Mayas, the idea that you sometimes need to bloodlet. And so there, in Mexican cultures, there's this rich emphasis that it infuses Cesar Chavez's work, this idea that through suffering, by learning how to suffer, we learn how to gain focus for the struggle for justice. And one of the important things about this idea of suffering is that Cesar Chavez believed that by suffering, we learn how to have empathy and sympathy for the suffering of others. If we know what suffering is, when we see others suffer, we can have a human bond with them. So one of the hunger strikes that he was most famous for in 1988 was in solidarity with the farm workers who suffer because of pesticides. And he refused food for over 20 days or so. And his statement at that time was, I do the suffering not because I'm trying to coerce people to do something. I'm doing this because I was ashamed. I wasn't aware of how much the farm workers were suffering because of pesticide, and I felt this kind of guilt. So I wanted to take their pain inside me. I wanted to show the world the kind of pain that the farm workers are suffering. And then after he finished his fast, he encouraged others to take on fasts. And so what he wanted to do was to create what he called a great chain of suffering, where for 3 days a person would take on a fast and to suffer after he had finished. Then another person would take on that chain. And the idea was to raise awareness of the kind of pain and suffering that farm workers go through because of exposure to various kinds of chemicals. And so this was a very a big theme throughout most of his activism and work, the idea that it is through suffering that we gain this kind of strength, this kind of discipline to also develop a certain kind of character that allows us to be able to feel the pain of others. And the final value about this is about revolution. Right? He believed that that what we need is great change in our social structures, in our economic structures, in our political structures, that will orient the world towards peace and nonviolence. And so, in one of his famous quotes, he says that in history, our institutions and our societies will be judged by how well they address the needs of the poor and the hungry. And so, for him, we needed a kind of revolution of values, a kind of different way of thinking about how our society should be structured. And, of course, he always again emphasized that this revolution must be done nonviolently. So for him, these values of pilgrimage, of a journey towards justice, of penitence, of learning to suffer for strength and for vision and for empathy, and revolution for a change in society, these were the kinds of values that really drove his life.
We're talking to Jose Antonio Orozco, author of Cesar Chavez and the Common Sense of Nonviolence. In addition to things like hunger strikes, there were work strikes, boycotts, and many probably of our listeners were involved in boycotting grapes and so on. How well did these actually work in terms of creating conditions of better wages, better working conditions, political representation, and so on?
Well, they were tremendous in some sense. I think, you know, we have to understand that Cesar Chavez was not just a labor leader, and he was able to accomplish great reforms for workers in California. For instance, through the pressure of the United Farm Workers, California was able to pass legislation that gave the state the ability to recognize farm worker unions and created an agricultural board to oversee conditions in the fields. And so there was that kind of mobilization that he was able to accomplish within California. But we have to understand that the grape boycott that started the late 60s was a worldwide phenomenon. I've talked to people who, you know, in talking about Cesar Chavez, people, you know, from New York, from the Netherlands, from Germany, who told me, I was part of the boycott. I remember being part of this. I remember being in solidarity with the work. And so you have stories of people who remember the dock workers along the West Coast refusing, for instance, to load and unload grapes to go travel overseas. And so we have to understand this boycott, and this is the way that Cesar Chavez visioned it, was that by refusing to buy grapes, people who are too busy to become involved in protest marches or to become involved in strikes can have a part in trying to alleviate the suffering of others. So he was always about trying to develop various kinds of techniques that would give ordinary people the ability to express their solidarity with the suffering of others. And the boycott was a very, very effective way of doing that. Of course, there was the protests, the strikes, the marches. And in some sense, all of these things were part of the political strength. But he has this kind of cultural strength, too, as well. I think for many Mexican-Americans, for many Chicanos, and many of the listeners probably in Santa Fe and in Albuquerque and in New Mexico in general, were part of this the Chicano movimiento of the 1960s and 70s, who saw Cesar Chavez as a figure who was finally saying, we, the ordinary people, the people of the earth, can have power, we can have voice, and we never have to go back again. And this is one of the things that Cesar Chavez constantly talked about, was that once you educate a person, once you give a person strength and the ability to stand up for themselves, you can't take that away from them. And so I think that there's this kind of cultural image that he has for Chicanos and Mexican Americans, this idea that we have the ability now to be able to stake our claims and to find a place in the United States.
How are farm workers in California doing now?
Well, it's a very difficult situation in many, many different places. There are laws in place, but shortly after, in the 1980s, shortly after there were the big reforms that Cesar Chavez's union started, conservative governors came in and started to dismantle many of these kinds of protections. And so it's a very difficult case. We can't generalize too much, but we can say that in some cases the lives of farm workers haven't improved all that much. In many cases, they're still paid piecemeal. In some farms, for instance, they receive inadequate housing, if any housing at all. In the late 1990s, there was great exposés in in San Diego, where farm workers were found to be living in caves outside of San Diego in their cars. And so, you know, if you go to the fields, in some cases, some of these farms will not have water for them out in the, you know, 100-plus heat, no bathroom facilities, very little worker protection. And so by a case-by-case basis, we can see that in many ways, many farm workers still are an exploited class, very, very vulnerable population. And this is one of the saddest things is that, for instance, where I live in Oregon, the agricultural industry is one of the largest sectors of the Oregonian economy. And significant portions of the workers there who pick the food are Latino and largely Mexican immigrants. And so these are the people that are picking our food, that are giving us the food that is on our plate each and every night. And these are the people that, from the standpoint of worker and work safe workplace protection and safety, are the most exploited and vulnerable. And so, so there are some laws in place in several states, but there's nothing federal. There's nothing nationwide, and so we see various kinds of cases of exploitation, like in California, in Florida, and so there's still quite a bit of work to be done in making sure that these people who provide so much for the rest of the United States are taken care of.
Jose Antonio Orozco is the author of the book Cesar Chavez and the Common Sense of Nonviolence, published by the University of New Mexico Press, and he will be at Garcia Street Books tonight, Monday, the 14th of July, from 5 to 6 in the evening. Jose Antonio, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary.